hear the prophet's cry of hope ring through the prison wall. We've waited 30 centuries to see that hammer fall. If we think we've got 30 more, we cannot.
This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your 100-watt wonder station. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. We'll be back with you in a minute. Enjoy your enjoy the music.
Play piano, but lacking Nero's conscience, I could not watch that fire devour the land. My name is John Shushard. I am no stranger to the prison that awaits us. But where genocide is legal, I stand an outlaw with a hammer in my hand. I hear the prophet's cry of hope ring through the prison wall. We've waited 30 centuries to see that hammer fall. If we think we've got 30 more, we cannot see at all. For swords into plowshares, the hammer has to fall. Dean Hammer is my name, Micah and Isaiah, my tradition. Oh, I tried to be their scholar, but could not escape their logic in the end. My name is Philip Berrigan. In World War II, I flew the bombing missions. Now with every blow I strike today, I say the bombs will never fall again. I hear the prophet's cry of hope ring through the prison wall. We've waited 30 centuries see that hammer fall. If we think we've got 30 more, we cannot see at all. For swords into plowshares, the hammer has to fall. Carl Cabot is my name. I have.
What is your organization? Again, thank you. Bless your heart.
Okay, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. Due to station regulations and the FCC, we have to say that any opinions expressed on this show are those of the person speaking them and not connected with the organization or the radio station.
Okay.
So that's
we're meeting all legal requirements.
Understood.
So, right. So Dick Paddock has now been speaking to you. He is co-host and engineer extraordinaire. Without Dick, we couldn't have our show on the air. And I'm Lori Hoyt, co-host with Dick. And we are having some very interesting guests today, something that affects, they're connected with an organization that affects all of us. And it's called the Coalition for Healthcare of North Carolina. And our guests are Carol Edmonds and Mary Grace. I don't know your last name.
Grace
is the last name. Okay. That's such a pretty last name, Mary Grace. It sounded so Catholic. You know,
It is Catholic.
Oh, Mary full of grace. Well, that is just lovely. So the work with this coalition, hasn't this coalition been going on for a long time? Tell me more about it.
Actually, we're pretty new.
Oh.
We sprung out of Occupy Health and Wellness.
That's why I thought it was a long time.
So yes, we've been many of us individuals have been around working with Occupy and then with Occupy Health and Wellness, and just felt that we needed to focus more on healthcare and expand the base. So we formed this coalition and we're growing, and it's been quite a wonderful journey.
And Carol, so I know you've been in it since Occupy too.
Yeah, I got involved with Occupy, and then as a one of the working groups that we had with Occupy was the health and wellness group. So that started back, what, 13 or 11? I lose track of time.
I was here for 12. I think a lot of stuff was happening in 2012.
Yeah. So
this is going on. Time flies so fast, and the older you get, and I'm pretty old, it's flying by. So I'm surprised Occupy was that long ago. It just seemed like a few years ago. Well, so you've all been working for a long time, and what you've done then is, I guess, with coalition means getting other people joining forces with you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so... was there any particular organizations or just more folks?
At this point, most of it is individuals within other organizations. So we're sort of networking within different organizations and working on trying to get sort of an official people on organizations on board. But we don't have an official list yet of organizations. We're working with a plethora of organizations, all of whom are very interested and doing their own incredible work on healthcare and Medicaid expansion. If you want, I could read our little
who are you?
So we are a grassroots movement of people just like you who feel strongly that all of our residents, especially the vulnerable, deserve access to affordable health care. That's why our initial aim is to convince the governor and the state legislature of North Carolina to accept federal Medicaid funding for Medicaid expansion, which would provide health coverage for almost 500,000 North Carolinian citizens and would actually save the state money. So besides creating jobs, saving lives, it would save money for the state.
I know, and this has been so disappointing and infuriating to most of us, because the federal government, if I understand it correctly, will pay 100%. Is that...
Is it 100% or 90%?
It's 100% for now. For the first 3 years, and then it would drop down to 90% after the 3 years. So and the first 3 years are totally covered.
And so all of us are paying taxes to the federal government for this Medicaid expansion, and some other smarter states
have accepted Medicaid expansion.
And our monies go into those states
and
rather
our monies,
than benefiting our citizens.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were sharing mics, so we're trying to remember to...
Our tax monies is supporting the other states' Medicaid expansions, and it's not benefiting our citizens.
So many of us have been complaining about that. I know this Saturday we're going to have HK on Jay, Reverend Barber's organization, the state NAACP. It's our 10th year anniversary, and that there's several. It's 14 points. It's similar to Wilf in that it's multi-issue, but he. You know, expanding health care has been on that agenda for a long time. And I'm so glad that you're working on this. I first met you, Mary Grace, about 3 weeks ago? It was another very cold day. We've had a few warm days in between. It was one of these very cold days that we met at outside at this little park in Durham.
For the pray-in.
And you might want to tell us about what you did that day.
Yes, I wanted to say also we are planning on marching at HK on J. We'll be there with our new banner, which has a Dr. King quote, which we'd like to share.
Please do.
This surprised me when I heard this, but is valid. So of all, Dr. King said, of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health care is the most shocking and inhumane.
Wow. So this goes back a long, long time.
Yes, we are the richest country on the planet, and yet we allow people to die. There's, according to, let's see, we've already, one hospital in North Carolina, the Pungo Hospital in Belhaven, North Carolina, has already closed, and there are other rural hospitals especially, which are in critical danger of being closed because they simply don't have now. They don't have the income. They can't cover all the emergency expenses. You've got a huge base of rural poor, who many of whom are uninsured or underinsured. Even those people with health care under the ACA, Obamacare, I like to call it Obamacare. Many more people are covered. However, even some of those people who are covered can barely afford their premiums. And if they can, then sometimes they can't afford their copay. So our goal in the long run is universal system of quality health care for everyone. So that's and our first step toward that is Medicaid expansion.
And I think all hospitals, and correct me on these facts, but there used to get some kind of reimbursement before Obamacare, and we say that is in a complimentary way. We don't mean that pejoratively at all. Very thrilled that that was at least the beginning of a good health care bill. It can be improved, but it's a good start. And before that, because they had counted on this Medicaid expansion.
Precisely.
Picking up some of the costs for hospitals with the poor, in the states where they have been intransigent and ideological and care about that more than about their own people, that therefore the hospitals are not getting money that they used to get. And so all hospitals are struggling, but of course the bigger, richer ones, like UNC and Duke, they're proliferating still. And these small rural hospitals that mean so much to people, so they don't have to drive 100 miles or more to try to get health care.
Well, yes, let's talk people are dying. According to a 2014 study by researchers at Harvard and City University of New York, they project that between 455 and 1,145 North Carolinians, so that's only our state, who would be covered under Medicaid expansion, will die each year because they lack health insurance.
Well, give me those numbers again.
Yes, ma'am. It's a 2014 study by Harvard and City University of New York. They project that between 455 people and 1,145 North Carolinians, only our state, who would be covered under Medicaid expansion will die each year because they lack health insurance. I have two other. Yes.
And that's about probably about four people a day are dying.
To make that
real. Yeah. Yes. And also, according to a study done by the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a very well-respected, not partisan group, Medicaid expansion would extend insurance coverage to 357,000 people in North Carolina. And the Department of Health and Human Services estimated that accepting Medicaid expansion would save the state. So get this. We're talking about taxes. Save the state approximately $65 million over 10 years. You know, it's economically it makes sense. People are dying.
Morally, spiritually, economically. Because when you think of how upset we get when there's a plane crash or a train or horrible accident about, 10, 20, 50, 100 people getting injured. People go into mourning and there's a lot on the news and everything. But somehow this is the hidden deaths. Too bad that each time. And, of course, then they'd say, well, you can't tell, you can't prove it. But if each time somebody's died, we could just show the picture of when they were alive or they're grieving. Somehow, to have people, because people are generous-hearted and they are caring people, but we get, I think, too many abstract figures come at us. We kind of glaze over. There's just so much, too much information coming at us.
And Carol is actually doing a wonderful project where she's collecting stories of people. But I like the idea of adding a photograph. But Carol, do you want to talk a little bit about?
Yeah, tell us, Carol.
Yeah. Well, initially, I started traveling across the state collecting stories when they initially failed to pass the Medicaid expansion back in 2013. And I've been interviewing folks, and I put out a short documentary called Meet the People. And it's these people's stories. And I think part of what goes on is, I mean, I was actually threatened and really had some people, you know, coming at me to, you know, about for doing this, the piece. And it was because they were so angry and had such stereotypes and of who is not getting medical help and who's not, you know, and they happen to be just very biased, biased people. And I just found that, and I think that's part of why, you know, there's a divide. You know, there's people that see the need for medical care, but then there's the others that, why should we? You know, we work for ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that mentality. And it was a very disturbing experience to have folks, you know, act that way. And I think that's part of the problem is the division and the way we're subtly pitted against each other,
yeah.
and with the rhetoric and stuff. But yeah, and what I found is a lot of the people I interviewed were professionals who either by their health issues had to leave work and found themselves with no insurance, or they had, you know, lost their jobs through their jobs being exported, or, you know, so there's multiple. And even when we went to talk with the governor's assistants, you know, a few weeks ago, they seemed to have an impression of who these people are.
The deserving and the undeserving poor.
Yes. Yes.
And that goes way back in our history.
Yes. And so, but I just don't think people, you know, some of these folks are looking at the moral side of it, and that people are suffering. They're not getting the medical attention, and they're not getting the treatments that they need, and, you know, people are dying from it. So,
we're speaking to Carol Edmonds right now, who we want to come back to this also about her documentary, which is a brave thing to go around the state, and I want to hear more about it. But I also want to get back with Mary Grace about that prayer in. Tell us about that and what you all did. And gathered and accomplished, because it was really, really wonderful.
Thank you. That's one of the things that we did was we had a pray-in at the Bull Plaza in downtown Durham, where we have been on a campaign collecting letters to the governor. People have been signing all over the state. People have been signing letters to the governor that we very carefully researched. We got a lot of information, put a lot of facts, why this should happen, what's going on now, the improvements that could happen. And so people have been signing these letters, and we've had about 5,000 letters signed. 4,800 and something letters have been signed already.
Yeah.
And probably more than that, because people have signed and sent them individually. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to have some kind of a way for delegates, most about half of them were NCCU students who were taking a public policy class with one of our
signatures.
That's correct. They got probably about half the signatures, along with our incredibly stalwart volunteer Mary White, who's also part of this cadre. So we had all these letters, and we wanted to do a pray-in to send these delegates into the governor's office where they met with – they met that afternoon. So the pray-in was incredibly well attended by so many people from different organizations, individuals representing different organizations, and it was – it was powerful. It was wonderful and passionate. And people were talking just with bewilderment that our government in North Carolina cares so little about human life. And yet they say they care about life. I mean, I was looking at the governor's website. He says he cares about economy. And yet we've got wait, I had a stat here. Yes. So the governor says his top priority is job and the economy. But Medicaid expansion would bring all these jobs. How it would create 43,000 jobs by 2020. 43,000 jobs. And
these would be pretty good jobs in healthcare.
Right. And Purdue, so then there's a new Purdue plant that's going to be starting up, and they will create a big 30 jobs in our state.
And they probably got money to help with the startup. And here's this money being beg almost for you to take, and because they are caught up in this right-wing ideology, and the governor a year or two started making some noises like he might consider it, and that's the last we heard of that, I guess, unless you've heard.
Well, we apparently the Speaker of the Senate is also very opposed to Medicaid expansion and is somewhat the stumbling block.
Okay.
So we're urging people to contact the Senate and the governor's office, if anyone would like his phone number.
Phil Berger.
There you go, Phil Berger. Mm-hmm. And to contact those offices, I do have the number for the governor, is 919-814-2000. And you can call and talk with a lovely lady there.
Say it again.
The number for the governor's office is 919-814-2000. We urge you to call. Another thing.
Let's give that number before the end of the show.
Okay.
Also. And this makes me realize we always try to remind people, have your ready, because we always try to give you some ways that you can get more information about whatever our issue that we talk about on a particular day. So be ready. We'll give it again in a little while.
Also, on the governor's website, he talks about his support of vets. It's very important to understand that we have many homeless vets here, and under Medicaid expansion, there would be 23,300 vets in North Carolina who would be covered for Medicare. At this point, they are not. And it might be good to just remind people that Medicaid is health insurance program, government-subsidized health insurance program that primarily covers children, pregnant women, people with disabilities, and low-income seniors. So it's the other people, the rest of us, who are falling through the cracks. However, we've also got 4.5 in the United States, so countrywide. There are 4.5 million children with no medical care. They're just not being covered.
This is nationwide.
Nationwide, yes, ma'am.
Which is heartbreaking.
Yes.
And I don't think a lot of people realize. They think it's just for the poor. But I'm a senior, and a big chunk of it goes to end-of-life care for seniors who run out of funds and need assisted living or nursing care. And that's where a bigger chunk goes, and a lot of people realize. And yet then, at the other end, with young people, we're shortchanging. So you talked about, Carol, you talked about the stereotypes people have about the undeserving poor. But if they – and then everybody gets gung-ho about their – love their veterans. And they don't put two and two together that these – the veterans, their aging parents – or their aging cells, these are also ones who are going to be needing some help, or most often will, because if you've ever checked the cost of assisted living and nursing care, unless you're a millionaire, you can't afford very much of that. So I just think you're right. If we could just dispel some of these stereotypes and misinformation that, of course, is churned out by the right wing. It would help people make better decisions.
You know, when you say right wing, I tend to think in a different a different mode. I tend to think it's by the greedmongers, by the people who have and control the wealth. And there are, unfortunately, plenty of so-called left-wing people who are way up there in income and are making decisions based on that economic reality for them.
Okay, well, that was a good correction, so we got to be careful. No, but that you know, sometimes what people we think are so progressive are progressive in this narrow way here, but miss the boat there, and that's an important thing to keep in mind. I want to get – do you – gave me – we're going to be getting ready in a couple of minutes to have a station break. Okay. Yeah. And we have some announcements, so why don't we get started on that, and then we'll come back. And I don't want us to forget to come back, Carol. I want to hear more about your documentary, because I think that's what I was starting to say. I think making – telling stories of individuals and that's accompanied by any pictures, mm-hmm. that makes it real to people in a way that they cannot be as hard-hearted, mm-hmm. and maybe could help your group and all of us put pressure on the governor and the legislature. Mm-hmm. It's not too late. They can still consider that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so, Dick, we'll do a station break.
Yeah. I hope.
Okay, I'll get started while you're clearing up your throat here. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, our wake-up call where we connect the dots. We're a multi-issue organization. We have just celebrated our 80th birthday here in the Triangle in North Carolina and 100th birthday nationally and internationally. So we're very proud to belong to this historic organization. And we were here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 o'clock with our wake-up call, and we try to get people in the community telling us about the things that they're working on. And this is, I think, another way to make, instead of talking abstractly about healthcare, where we get Mary Grace and Carol Edmonds with us today, whatever the issue is, we try to get somebody who cares about it to come on and tell us about their work with it. And I think that makes, we hope it makes it more real to our listeners.
Right.
And this is Dick Paddock, my co-host. I'm Lori Hoyt.
This is Dick Paddock with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. If you're really addicted to Wake Up Call, there are two other places you can have your addiction assuaged. One is by going to the website of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom,
which is
Triangle WILPF. For Women's International League of Peace and Freedom.
WILF, affectionately called WILF.
WILF. And there's a button on the left-hand side that says radio, and you can go in there and pull up any old archived radio that you'd like to hear. And then
we try to keep it reasonably up to date, but probably it will go back about a month, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, till we get it over there right. And gets on there.
And the other thing that we do is that while we are talking to you on the radio, we're also videotaping our show, and it will be broadcast before too long on the People's Channel. And the People's Channel broadcasts it for sure at 10 o'clock on Thursday evenings from 10 to 11. And it may appear at other times kind of randomly, depending upon how it fits into their schedule, because they don't necessarily have a 100% coverage of their schedule. So you may catch it at other times.
And the People's Channel in if you have Time Warner Cable, in Chapel Hill is Channel 8. In Carrboro, I think it's 4. And we forgot to mention, we talked about our names, but talking about our video camera, Emily O'Hare is our videographer, and she is operating the camera, and it's always, it's a very difficult job because we have all, it's a small studio with all these mics, and so she gets so frustrated trying to get where she can see a person and not just a microphone, and we try to cooperate, but sometimes we're just busy thinking of other things and are not always the best cooperator we should be. But I'm Leo Hare, and anyhow.
Right. And the next thing we need to mention is the website of the radio show,
yes.
Radio station, which is WCOMFM.org. And you can go to that website, and there's a button that you can click there that will connect you to whatever show is being broadcast, and it'll stream right into your computer.
So this is a very low-power community station, and even if you live reasonably close by, depending on the trees and the weather, sometimes if you live a little further, it'll work. It's very temperamental. So if you listen and you're getting too much static or it fades in and out, if you have a computer, and many of you do, then turn on your computer and go to WCOMFM.org.
O-R-G. Yes.
O-R-G. Yeah. And then you can get us live.
I'm going to make an announcement here that fits in with something that I was watching earlier today.
Okay.
There's a thing for online called Fusion, which
oh what?
There's a series of shows online called Fusion.
Fusion,
which is mostly following Reverend Barber.
As he
moves around the state and elsewhere.
And how? And, where? What station? What channel is that on?
It's a YouTube channel. You just have to go in and ask for Fusion, and it'll bring it to you. But
a computer thing.
Yeah, that's a computer thing. And the one that I was watching was very interesting because Reverend Barber started off by having Yara Allen, who's one of the field representatives for the NAACP here in North Carolina, but she's also a very accomplished singer.
What's her name?
Yara Allen.
Oh, Yara. Okay.
Yeah, and so he introduced her, and by way of saying that we have to bring culture into our activities,
yes,
because culture of whatever kind is the memory of our civilization, and so anyway, that's by way of coming down to the fact that the town of Carrboro was searching for a poet laureate.
Mm-hmm.
The Arts Committee of the Town of Carrboro seeks applications and nominations for the position of Poet Laureate of Carrboro. The main duty is to engage in activities that enhance the presence of poetry in the social and civic life of Carrboro. The laureate should be a practicing poet. A record of publication and public readings will be considered assets but are not required. If you wish to apply, please submit a cover and 3 to 5 poems, no more than 5 pages of poetry. Also, please provide a statement of 350 words on your vision of the role of poetry in Carrboro. All application materials must be received by April 30th, 2016. And you email your application materials to RTROST, which I don't know what it stands for, but at townofcarrboro.org. That's RTROST.
And if you don't get that written down, check with the town of Carrboro. I'm sure you can find
right.
out that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't let's forget to say again that this Saturday, February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day, a way to show your love for your fellow human beings is to go to HK on J, Historic Thousands on John Street, where we're having our 10th anniversary of Marching for Social Justice with Reverend Barber, who's the head of the state NAACP, but It's a broad coalition of over 100 or more than that, 200, how many are we? Many, 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 over 200
organizations.
Organizations, including progressive ones, faith organizations, just many organizations have joined forces with Reverend Barber, particularly since Moral Mondays, which I take it any listener who's listening knows what we're talking about. I think that really upped the interest and the attendance. And I think that, our present legislature has been a good recruitment tool
for HKNJ.
For HKNJ, a lot of people came out to Moral Mondays, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, who would not have normally gone out for marching in the streets. And
right.
So it's been very heartening that it's very upsetting what the legislature is doing or not doing, that at the same time, progressive interest has increased and people have gotten, many more people have gotten involved that were involved before. So we have to hope that that keeps growing. And it's particularly important we're getting into elections and find out with early voting starts March 3rd. Find out for wherever you live. I know in around here, I know it's Carborough Town Hall. I know it's the Senior Center. There's maybe another place I don't know. We'll be announcing that next week. We'll find out more. And if you have not registered, if you've moved here from someplace else, and our population changes 50% a year, I heard, which sounds more than I would have thought, but maybe with all the students and people changing jobs. But if you have not registered and forgot about it, you can register during early voting, not on election day, but during early voting. So please keep that in mind.
Does that mean that they can register and vote the same day?
Yes.
Same day registration?
While they're voting, yeah. They can register.
Or they better register first.
After they register, they can
registration comes first, and then the vote. Yes, yes. Thank you, Dick. We want that to be very clear. So keep that starting up. What, in another couple of weeks?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's get back to it.
Let's get back to our guests and back to
Chapel Hill and Carborough.
Yes, back to Carol Edmonds and Mary Grace, who are with the Coalition for Healthcare of North Carolina. And I've known Carol for a long time, but first met Mary Grace at that famous pray-in in the
I was at the Wolf 80th anniversary.
Well,
with Jean Chapman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew you looked familiar when I saw you. Okay, we had a big party.
It was delightful.
If you missed it, we'll try to have some kind of a party next
Everybody
year.
Everybody, welcome.
We had our big party, yes, and I think we had about 70 people at our party. So, Mary Grace, I did meet you before. But where I was like sort of introduced to you was at that pray-in in that park on that freezing cold day.
It was cold.
And I thought, oh, Lord have mercy, this is a real test of one's commitment. And my feet were like little ice stumps walking back to the car. But you're right, there was a good turnout in so many people, and I think there would have been more.
Of course.
If the weather had been nicer. But even with its freezing weather, colder than today, it was a fair amount of people there. And so these were the real dedicated souls. And thank you for organizing that. So I'd like to get back before time runs out to Carol about the documentary. So you started that. When did you start doing documentaries?
Back in 2012.
In 2012,
mm-hmm.
During Occupy.
Was about the same time. Yeah.
Was that Occupy motivated you, or you already were thinking about it, or?
Well, I had been in school at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, so, and then Occupy came along. And
So you were primed.
I had plenty to film and to work on. Yeah.
So this ready-made, wonderful subject just came along. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Had you finished your course of studies at Duke Documentaries?
The healthcare piece was my graduation project.
So, okay.
So
super.
We all got to watch it. It's really wonderful.
So
it does put pictures to those people.
Yeah, it just seemed to me that there was a huge disconnect between people of faith and their voting practices, and I wanted to explore some of that, and I covered some of that in my documentary and told the stories of people that needed health care. I was just amazed at the different situations that people are in and what they go through to try to get health care. I interviewed a woman who lived in a domestic abuse situation just so that she would have access to health care, and there were one person was living in a homeless shelter because that homeless shelter had a connection to health care services that he would not have been privy to had he not lived at that particular shelter. There was one guy who had cancer, and he was finally able to get on Medicaid, but to get on Medicaid, he and his wife had to separate. And they could not be living together for him to get his Medicaid.
So much for support of the family.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, there's people out there that are going through extreme and situations that us privileged folks, you know, don't even dream about.
People in the middle class, even people are still losing their homes, going into bankruptcy over trying to protect and provide care for their children or spouse or an elderly parent. It's an outrage. People should not lose their home to be able to stay alive.
I remember
one person I interviewed, they lost their rental home. I mean, they were lucky enough to have two homes, but they had to sell their rental home to pay the medical bills.
Mm-hmm. I remember Ellie Kinnaird years ago being furious that UNC, you know, was started, the hospital was started at the end of the Second World War. I don't know if you know that story, but so many North Carolina had the worst rate of recruits being in such poor health they couldn't accept them into the service because this was such a poor state, and the diet and the I guess the kind of diet when you're so poor, they were in such poor health that the Army couldn't take them, and it was an embarrassment to the state. So at the end of the Second World War, they started supposed to be the People's Hospital for people in the state as a way to start having health care available and to be a beacon for the state. And it's changed so much and has become such a money-making thing where sometimes they imply that if you don't have the money, you can't come see somebody. They do have a charity care program, but it's very bureaucratic, and they and I know some people who've applied for it, and then they always lose something, and by the time you go back and forth, it takes a long time. They don't advertise it, but they do have that. But even that's not free. To see the doctors, it's $35. I think it's about $35 unless that's changed. So, you know, even there, if you're poor, $35 can be a difficult thing to come up with.
Or impossible.
So I know Ellie said that now they have lawyers waiting at the courthouse like ghouls to if you sell your house and everything, to take their money from you. That they
put liens on your property.
Yeah. They put liens on your property, and you know, God help you. They'll get their money, and that is just for a state hospital. And this is back, of course, before we got Obamacare, which we hope would take care of that. And for people who don't realize, Medicaid expansion was to expand it to the working poor. The Medicaid right now, you have to be destitute practically to get Medicaid. And it's only for families when there's children. So if you're a single person and you've lost your job and you have terrible health, there's no program for you. So this was to pick up, you know, people who didn't fit into whatever programs we have, and mostly it would have been the working poor. And so any time they say about, oh, people, you know, don't want to work for things, these are people who work very hard.
Well, the you know, if someone's working minimum wage and, you know, the rent is $800 a month, I mean, that's, you know, that does not leave very much for food, gas, heating, and electricity, much less health care.
Exactly.
And food.
Yes, and food. Yes.
Healthy food.
Yes. So, you know, these folks that, you know, put down people who work at, you know, minimum wage jobs, you know, they're working. So why are you putting them down?
And those are hard
down?
Jobs.
Yes.
And
yes.
And you have to be pretty smart. I mean, you know, and fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, you watch people if you go into McDonald's or into a fast food place and watch how hard they work.
And the hours that they work.
Yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily have set hours every single day. You know, they're working weekends. They're working,
yeah,
you know, maybe a morning shift one time and mm-hmm. an afternoon shift.
Very inconsistent. Yes, and the whole idea of minimum wage not being a living wage and not being enough to so that somebody working full-time can provide for themselves and their families, that means that when somebody is so poor, even though they're working full-time, if they don't earn enough to pay bills, to get insurance, to deal with stuff, that means the taxpayers are subsidizing McDonald's, subsidizing these corporations
subsidizing Walmart.
that are paying such a low wage that people can't access decent care and decent food and decent homes. That means you, the taxpayer, are paying the corporations so that they can pay their workers less. So then we can blame the workers who are not being self-supporting. It's an outrage.
So the hypocrisy of it, if you think it through, and it doesn't take a lot of brains to think that through, and I know, I think, I don't know if that's still true, but I know with Walmart, supposedly they would have information in the workers' lounge and everything about how to apply for food stamps, how, you know.
They do.
And I don't know if that's still going on, but I know it probably is. So they're very well aware that their workers are going to have to get government help so that Walmart can make its profits. And so if you think of even what kind of an economy works that way.
Yeah, it's corporate welfare.
Corporate wealth. And, yeah, that's a very good way to put it.
Based
a lot of
corporate greed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So right now we're focusing in terms of the justice of all of this on the Coalition for Healthcare of North Carolina, who are trying to get Medicaid. Right now the main push is for Medicaid expansion to save people dying, actually literally dying because they lack health care. And what happens is, you know, people will put off, a lot of times they will put off when they think it's not too bad. And by the time, so it gets more expensive in the long run. By the time they finally get to the doctor, their diabetes is out of control, their blood pressure. And so all of this then becomes more expensive interventions are needed. So it's not even cost effective, let alone anything else.
Yeah, one of the things that's fascinating is that there are people who rage against the idea of giving government more control over this. And my question is, so that means that we trust insurance companies and pharmaceuticals to make these decisions for us. I hurt my wrist. It was a workers' comp claim. I had to fight with Liberty Mutual. I'm going to say the name. They were terrible, horrible, no good, very bad. I had to fight with them. And I had two different doctors order acupuncture. But the insurance company said, oh, no, we can't cover that. So consequently, I have a lifelong disability. The company has to now, because I had to take them to court, they have to pay me a certain amount each month. And it's outrageous. I don't have my full use of my wrist because the insurance companies decide what you may and may not have. Mm-hmm. Whereas at least if it's government, then we can vote them out if we don't like what they're doing. You cannot vote out a corporation. It doesn't happen. So take responsibility, vote, and make a difference. It's vital.
That is such a good point where they would say, I don't want the government interfering, with my health care.
And they've already got the insurance companies dictating, what the doctors, may not.
Yeah. They're the ones who are rationing it, and they're rationing it based on they want their profits. At least the government would have some rules in place that, right, we can vote the people out or, raise hell with the government, but with a corporation, you don't stand a chance. I mean, they have so many lawyers, they can just...
And one thing, going back to the ER visits and stuff, you know, some people will say if they get sick, they can go to the ER. Well, they can go to the ER, but the ER just takes care of the acute problem. Like one of the people in my subjects of my documentary went to the ER, and they gave him pain pills and a bill. And he didn't get better, and they came back and gave him pain pills, a laxative, and a bill. And it turned out it was colon cancer.
He
was 33 years old when he died. So that's the...
And I think the underlying recognition is that colon cancer is one of those pretty preventable things. You get your colon screening, and you eat well, which I've heard it said we have a disease care system, not a health care system. We do not help people stay healthy. We do not... It's not in the schools. It's not... Our system is a disease care system, and even at that, it's bad.
So I think...
Could we announce the legislative forum that's coming up?
You can announce anything you want to. We want to hear about it.
Thank you. One of the wonderful things we've been trying to do is help people understand what's happening in the legislature around health care. To that end, we're going to be having a legislative forum. It's going to be on April 26th from 7 to 8:30 in the evening at NCCU. And everyone is welcome. It's free to the public, and we're inviting all kinds of legislators and other medical professionals to speak out and share their information and insights. So we hope you will come. Again, it's a legislative forum, April 26th at NCCU, 7 to 8:30 p.m.
So that's what's
going to be in the law school auditorium?
Oh, yes, you're good. It's going to be in the law school auditorium there.
Okay. So I guess when you get to North Carolina Central, you just ask where the law school is?
Yeah.
And you can find it online ahead of time. Should be an address.
Okay.
So it's on one of the corners of the campus, so it's easy to find.
Okay.
We'd love you to join us.
Yes, we would.
If you have any passion about this or, make a phone call, that's great. Write a letter, that's great. Sign a letter to the governor. You should be able to find those
letters. Let's get the governor's phone number again.
Sure. You can reach our dear governor at 919-814-2000. Again, that's 919-814-2000.
Okay. So let the governor hear from you. He got, did we say about 4,000 signed?
Almost 5,000.
Almost 5,000 letters asking him to hold expand Medicaid.
And we're not done yet. We're still
collecting. We're still collecting.
Still collecting. And he had, I wonder what happened. Remember, he sort of made some noises.
He did.
Well, yes. I think the last thing he said, he was going to wait and see what the Supreme Court.
And the Supreme Court actually decided. Validated Obamacare.
Yeah, it did validate it.
And so,
now they are trying to redo it.
Well, there have been at least, 64 votes now that they've brought to the Senate to try to overrule?
Well, I mean, what the state is wanting to do is restructure Medicaid, which means privatize it.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know how well the privatization of the mental health care system in North Carolina
Carol,
went.
Let me get on my soapbox.
Yes.
That was such a boondoggle. We used to have mental health, centers in community mental health centers in every county. Some counties that were very small or poor, but bunched together, but they were all over, and it was a sliding scale, and they did a variety of services. You could go for individual, family, group. They had all kinds of. They had depending on the particular center and how big the catchment area was. They would have daycare for people with mental problems. They were wonderful. They weren't perfect, but they were wonderful, and they had stable staff who worked there and got to know the community. And they wanted to. I think it was President Kennedy, because of one of the his sister's having issues.
Right. Yeah.
That was very important to them, and he got it started. It was a big, wonderful. It was just, everybody was so excited. We're going to have these mental health centers all over the country. But they were just going a few years, and they started saying, we got to cut some costs here, cut some costs there. And they started chipping away and chipping away. And finally they said, oh, let's privatize. We'll save money that way. We keep trying to save money. And
now we have the worst suicide rate in our history.
And
among veterans, we have about 19 vets per day committing suicide.
And we have very, very bad mental health. It's very hard to get, unless you're very rich, to get mental health care anywhere in this state. It's just terrible. And people write into the paper upset about it, tell horrendous, sad tales. And that was what privatization did. Mm-hmm. And so some money was saved and people's lives were lost. Mm-hmm. Another story.
Yeah. And I'm sorry about looking on my phone. I was trying to find some information to give to you, but I can't find it right now. So I'll give it to you later.
Okay.
I could give one more stat.
No, those are always good.
Well, we're talking about money here. We spend, the United States as a country, spends about $8,508 per person per year on health care. Now, so this is tax money. This is your tax money. Through all kinds of required taxes, reimbursing hospitals, et cetera, we spend, as a country, about $8,508 per person in the United States on health care, compared with the United Kingdom, which spends about $3,405. So about less than half. They spend less than half on health care, and everybody's covered. Everybody is covered.
So
with no deductibles,
no copays,
and there's
choice of,
and this is what
it's better health care. The outcomes are better.
Yeah, better health, and everybody's saying, "Oh, Bernie is so unrealistic about saying health care for all." But already, you know, there's Medicare, there's Medicaid, there's the veterans. There's so many government programs already. And there wouldn't be that many more. I mean, and with what we're spending, we should get, everybody should be able to have. But how much of it goes to, we have 2 minutes, how much should go, how much does go to profits to the insurance companies, but also all the proliferation of this plan and that plan.
Right.
And all the paperwork and all the people have to sort that out, it would be so much simpler and easier.
Yes, our final end is universal health care. We believe that it should be universal health care, which means that the government would pay for health care from a public trust. However, there would be no copays, no deductibles, and people get to choose their own providers. You choose your own providers. No death panels. You choose your own providers. You keep your doctor.
And for those who want champagne and a creme de la creme plan, they can still go privately and get additional whatever. But for your basic good health, universal health care. And that's what I think we all kind of hoped when Obamacare started, that this would be the first step and then it would get improved and finally.
Well, as Amy Goodman would say, it's time to go. We have to leave it there.
Okay. And next week, next week we're going to have on Chris Attack, who is the media person for the Carborough Police Department.
Oh, okay.
And the week after that, we're going to have Chris Blue from the Chapel Hill Police Department. So we're going